You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday the 19th of May 2020 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioalbion.com. Well, unfortunately, we do have to cover some particularly tragic stories here at the Daily Nationalist because you're not going to hear about them on the mainstream media, and they are stories that people do need to hear about, so that they can try to prevent similar things happening to themselves. And this really follows on from yesterday's broadcast, where I was talking about Lenny Henry, who is accusing white girls of racism because they didn't want to dance with him at the end of the night, which is really predatory behaviour. I mean, Lenny Henry admits that he didn't show any interest to the girls for the rest of the night, and just in the last 5 minutes, he would move in there on these white girls in the hopes that he would be able to get intimate with them, which is predatory behaviour. And these white girls didn't want to get close to Lenny Henry for whatever reason. He just assumes it's racism. He's basically blaming these white girls, saying it's their fault that they weren't attracted to Lenny Henry. It must be because they were prejudiced. I would suggest they weren't prejudiced. I think we should have a word in the English language, post-judice, meaning that we are not prejudging people. We are looking at the evidence and forming our opinions from already agreed upon evidence. And the evidence is that if you are involved in an interracial relationship, then you are far more likely to become the victim of violence than if you were involved in a monoracial relationship. And that is not something you're going to hear in the schools. That's not something you're going to hear in the mainstream media. But if people did hear that, we would have a lot more of our young white women in particular that would still be alive, or that would not have been seriously maimed by their non-white boyfriends. And I'm talking about this in particular today because we've got two news stories today which are about this subject. And this isn't to say that violence doesn't occur in monoracial relationships. It does. But it doesn't occur at the rate that it does in interracial ones. And we'll get into the statistics for that later. This first news story comes from Sweden. A 17-year-old girl, a white girl, of course, was beheaded by her ex-boyfriend, a non-white boyfriend, of course, after breaking up with him in Sweden, it is alleged. And this is often the source of it, but not always the source of the problem, is the white girl will decide that she no longer wants to be with the non-white boyfriend, and the non-white boyfriend will decide, well, if I can't have her, nobody can have her. And he will effectively spoil the girlfriend so that nobody else can have her. And this is something that goes back to traditions in Africa and in non-white societies. I can recall, before I was even a nationalist, looking into this, and this tendency there was for males to spoil a female that is not interested in them anymore. And obviously it's not something that really happens that much in white civilized society, but it is something that happens in these non-white societies. One example of it would be the acid attack that we see now happening on the streets of London. A lot of the time it's against a partner, and it doesn't have to be an interracial relationship there. It can just be a monoracial relationship if it's non-whites that are involved in it, and they feel spurned by the girlfriend. Then that may be a course of action, unfortunately, that they do. And unfortunately, that now happens in our countries because we have imported it into our countries. In this case, the boyfriend didn't throw acid over his ex-girlfriend. He chopped her head off. Vilma Anderson vanished on November the 14th last year, and police found a body part 2 weeks later, which was later revealed to be her head. Her ex-boyfriend, Tishko Ahmed Shabazz, was arrested at the time and has now been charged with her murder, which he denies. And this is often a feature of these cases, is that the accused, the non-white, will refuse to plead guilty, even when there is a mountain of evidence to convict them. They will still plead non-guilty and put the family of the victim, or the victim if they're still alive and they've been raped, and put them through the hell of having to go through a trial. And that's not just hearsay, that comes from the David Lammy report, where he tells us that blacks and non-whites are always far more likely to plead not guilty, even when there is evidence to show that they are guilty, which he suggests is one of the reasons why there are more of them in prison, because when they do get found guilty, they get given a longer prison sentence. So this is just something that they do. They refuse to own up, even when they know that they're going to be found guilty, which puts the, as I say, puts the victim's family through the hell of having to go through court. Shabazz is accused of decapitating Vilma when she went to collect her belongings before wrapping her head in foil and hiding it at his home. I mean, this sounds really twisted. Besides the fact that he's decapitated her, he's decided to keep a trophy, basically. Charges against the 23-year-old suspect were announced last week in a case that has shocked Sweden, which has long held a reputation as one of the world's safest countries. And I would question that. I've seen statistics that show that Sweden is actually number two in the list of countries with the highest incidence of rape per head of the population. And of course, the majority of these rapes are being carried out by non-whites. Sweden does all it can to hide that from the Swedish people. But there are dedicated nationalist Swedes who have taken the time to go through all the court listings to actually see the names of these people that have been accused of these rapes. And of course, the names show that they're not actually Swedish. They're from the third world. So I would question that Sweden is one of the world's safest countries. According to Human Rights Monitor HRS, the suspect was born in Iraq and took up Swedish citizenship in 2014. So the country of Sweden have been kind enough to welcome in this foreigner who was probably claiming asylum status or something similar. And this is the way that he repays the country that took him in. He decapitates one of the country's daughters. Hundreds of volunteers had joined the search for Vilma after she was reported missing in Uddevalla on November the 17th, 3 days after she was last seen. And I'll just point out here, I'm not pointing this out because I'm trying to incite hatred against non-whites or against Iraqis. I am pointing this out because, well, for two reasons, really. Number one, that our governments knew that there was a much higher prevalence of this sort of behaviour happening in the non-white countries that we imported these people from. And number two, to prevent this sort of thing happening so that our own white people become aware of the dangers of getting involved in interracial relationships with these people. It's not about inciting hate against them. It's about trying to prevent these sort of things from happening. Hundreds of volunteers had joined the search for Vilma after she was reported missing in Uddevalla on November the 17th, 3 days after she was last seen. The body part was found on November 28th in a grim discovery, which was announced the following day, bringing the search to an end. Vilma's boyfriend had already been arrested by then and has been in custody ever since. The indictment claims that Vilma was killed on November the 14th, the day she went missing, and alleges that her ex-boyfriend cut up her body. So he didn't just decapitate her, he is also likely to have cut her up. We did have an instance in Italy of a white girl that was killed by African supposed refugees, and they cut up the body as well, and they actually tried to eat parts of the body. When they found the bones, there had been teeth marks on these bones where they had actually been gnawing into the body. You know, you can say that there is domestic violence that occurs between white people, but you don't get incidents of things like this happening. I mean, I can think of an incident that happened last year. There was a white teenage boy and his white girlfriend split up with him, and he viciously stabbed her hundreds of times, I think. It was a really, really horrific, horrific murder. Absolute mental case. But that's the only instance that I can think of happening. And he didn't chop the body up or keep parts of it or try to eat the body. And this was a really shocking murder. It's not something that you often hear about happening amongst white people, but we do regularly hear of these interracial relationships that end up with the white partner being viciously attacked like this. According to Expressen, Shabazz is accused of hiding Vilma's head in a travel bag where it was wrapped in tape and aluminium foil. I mean, that must have been really stinking by the time they found this. Police also found blood on the floor of his apartment and traces of Vilma on a large kitchen knife, it is alleged. So it's quite obvious that he murdered her, and yet he's still pleading not guilty. A suspect has retained a body part for an unknown reason and got rid of the rest of the body, the police chief said. Prosecutors claim that he murdered Vilma by subjecting her to repeated violence. The rest of Vilma's body has never been found, and relatives have urged people to continue their search. So again, he's basically causing as much hardship and grief as possible to the family of the victim, who are just desperate to find the rest of their daughter's body, which he has decided not to tell them. We want to find our daughter and sister. It is completely inhumane that we go through this, so please do not stop looking for Vilma, her mother Linda told Swedish media. Well, if the Swedish government had not imported these non-whites, Vilma would still be alive and would still be the delight of her mother Linda's life. But thanks to the Swedish government putting the what they think is going to be good for the economy above the good of their own people, and trying to be a humanitarian superpower, as they word it, young Vilma has now been decapitated. I hope people are observant. If they see something aberrant in water or terrain, that people have their eyes open, she continued. Relatives say that Vilma had gone to her ex-boyfriend's house to pick up her things after ending the relationship. And of course, she would have thought that this would be just like ending a relationship with a white partner. He would probably be a little bit sulky, maybe a little bit moody, or he would be trying to keep hold of her, being extra specially nice and trying not to be moody. She wasn't expecting the boyfriend to decide to kill her, basically, for this. If he can't have her, no one can have her. And as I said at the beginning of this, that is something that happens in these non-white countries. If a woman tries to break off a relationship, that is likely to happen because the non-white male will see that he's been dishonored by this, especially if they have been sleeping together. Because once you've slept together, they see that as marriage, basically, especially Islamic countries. So if the partner is then leaving, it's a dishonor on the man. And there is then the possibility that they will do something like this out of anger and also out of spite and not wanting anybody else to have what they themselves can no longer have. It is also claimed that neighbors heard screaming from the apartment and that Shabazz lied to Vilma's parents by claiming she had left the flat alive. However, Vilma's coat and handbag were allegedly still hanging in the closet, raising doubts over Shabazz's claims. Shabazz denies all the allegations, telling investigators, "You forget that this is a girl that I have loved and that I have lived my life perfectly." The trial is due to begin on May the 26th. And it's just tragic that family is going to have to go through this trial on top of losing their daughter. And I do wonder if this has woken them up to the fact that this would never have happened if it hadn't been for the immigration policy of Sweden. But I doubt that, because a lot of the times when things like this happen, the only way that the victim's family can actually get over this is to try and forgive the person that has done this and forgive the people that have done this. Just last week, we had a case of, I can't remember if it was a girl or a boy. I think it was a girl. And her mother had actually been killed by this black murderer, and he was released from prison. She had become a Buddhist. She befriended the killer of her mother because she thought that was the right thing to do, and he murdered her. So he had murdered both the mother and the daughter. But the only way that the daughter could actually continue to live her life was if she had forgave the guy that had murdered her mother. Because, as I was saying yesterday, revenge and vengeance and hatred will really ruin your life if you let yourself become like that. Unfortunately, we have a second story to do with interracial relationships here. But thankfully, this young lady is still alive. A youth worker who was left with life-changing injuries following a brutal attack by her boyfriend has opened up about her domestic abuse struggles. And this time, rather than it being an Iraqi, it's a black African. Who's got a British passport. Jade Herbert, 25, had to spend a month in hospital after suffering serious scars to her face, head and left hand from when Fidel Robinson, 23, attacked her with a glass jug, a chair, a television, a pair of scissors and a bread knife. So this isn't just lashing out and hitting someone in the middle of an argument. This is a serious attack with murder in mind. Between October and December last year, Robinson attacked the youth worker several times since their relationship began in September. So they'd only been together 3 months by the time he ended up doing this much damage to her. Robinson from Monsall, Manchester, was sentenced to 15 years in prison at Manchester Crown Court and was also given a lifetime restraining order, meaning he cannot contact Miss Herbert. Why wasn't he deported? And again, the only reason why this woman was injured in this way is because our government imported people that had a propensity to do things like this. And the only reason she thought he would make a good partner is because she hadn't seen the statistics, which I will get into in a bit, about interracial relationships. She had seen all the adverts on the television showing all these delightful, happy families between blacks and whites. And she'd heard all the propaganda in school. And I dare say she thought she would be racist if she turned down this black fellow. How can you turn down a black fellow that's asking to date you nowadays if you don't want to be accused of being racist? And even Lenny Henry is going to accuse white girls that don't want to go out with black boys as being racist. And we don't want to be racist, do we? That's the worst thing in the world, is to be accused of being racist. And yet, if she had taken that route, she may still be alive, or he may have just attacked her anyway, because he thought she was racist. This is a problem. If these girls say no, then they're running the risk of being attacked because the black boy might think that they're being racist. And if they say yes, they're still running the risk of being attacked just because there is a much higher chance of that happening in interracial relationships. The youth worker told police, "The incident left me feeling broken, and I am not the same person. I have experienced a roller coaster of emotions and am angry, upset, and frustrated." I hope she's angry at the government for their false propaganda that they put out about this. I mean, just look at EastEnders, the soap opera, which is full of all these multiracial relationships. All the time it has multiracial relationships on there. And not once has there been an instance of a white woman being murdered by the black boyfriend, or even attacked by the black boyfriend. She says, "I may be left with permanent scarring to my face, which reminds me of the ordeal every time I look in the mirror." Speaking about the attack that left her in hospital, Miss Herbert added, "He punched me in the face and smashed a glass jug over my head. I can't count the amount of times he hit me. He hit me all over my body and everything. He then stabbed me and cut me with scissors, stamped on me, and started smacking the jug all over my head. I had a big cast iron chair which he threw at me whilst kicking and punching me. I went to the bathroom where he hit me more. I was on the floor and thought he would stop, but he smacked the TV over my head whilst I was on the floor, and there was blood everywhere. I asked him if I could go to my sister's, but he said, 'If I can't have you, no one will have you.'" And there is your reason for this. She had obviously tried to split up with him, and he thought, well, if I can't have you, I'm just going to make it so that nobody is going to want you. It's this it's instinct to spoil the partner because they can no longer have the partner. Wanting to spoil something so that nobody else can have it. That's actually the technical term for it. So here we have two instances of interracial relationships that end up in extreme violence. And the anti-racists will say, yes, but that can happen in monoracial relationships. But it doesn't happen anywhere near as often. Now, I've got three articles, I think, here on it. First one is from 2016. And these are proper studies that have been carried out on this, looking into this. Intimate partner violence in interracial and monoracial couples. This study investigated intimate partner violence in interracial and monoracial relationships. Using a nationally representative sample, regression analyses indicated that interracial couples demonstrated a higher level of mutual intimate partner violence than monoracial white couples, but a level similar to monoracial black couples. So what that is saying is that blacks are more likely to have intimate partner violence, whether they are a monoracial black couple or whether it is a mixed race couple. It will be the black part of that couple that is attacking the white spouse. And it's a similar amount of violence as happens just between normal black couples anyway. Results showed that individuals in interracial relationships faced a significantly elevated risk of intimate partner violence victimization. Logistic regression analyses suggested that the presence of children and short union duration were particularly important in accounting for 56% of the elevated odds of IPV in interracial relationships. So, unfortunately, the presence of children meant it was more likely that there would be violence. And also, if the relationship had only just started, it would be more likely to end in violence. Interracial relationships are a vulnerable population, and the implications of the elevated risk of intimate partner violence in these unions needs to be considered in prevention efforts. Why are they vulnerable to violence? Well, they're vulnerable to violence because we have more incidents of violence in non-white populations. but they're not going to put it in those words. Second study that we've got here. Spousal homicides in interracial marriages 8 times more frequent than in racially homogenous marriages. So you're 8 times more likely to be murdered by your spouse if you are in a mixed race marriage. This is from the abstract. In this paper, we examine patterns and trends in homicides between marriage partners in the United States for 1976 through 1985. So this is a little bit older than these other studies, using data from the Federal Bureau of Investigation's Supplemental Homicide Reports. We identified 16,595 spousal homicides, accounting for 8.8% of all homicides reported to the FBI during this 10-year period. The risk of victimization was greater for spouses in interracial than in intra-racial marriages. So intra-racial marriages means homogenous racial marriages. Here is an excerpt from the paper. Spousal homicide incidence rates were 7.7 times higher in interracial marriages relative to intra-racial marriages. The patterns in this risk varied by race and sex. White husbands, white wives, and black wives were at greater risk of being killed by a spouse in an interracial than an intraracial marriage, whereas black husbands were at less risk. So it means that the ones that are carrying out the killing are the black males here. The above figures are from a 3-year period from 30 years ago. Are they generally representative? We need more data. James W. writes, those rates are essentially identical to the general black murder rate of 8 times the national average, so the black spouse is only carting them along into the marriage. And of course, that's something that nationalists are well aware of, that blacks are 8 times more likely to murder than white people are. But the average person that just listens to the mainstream media is completely unaware of that. I mean, maybe if white women knew that they were 8 times more likely to murder, just that alone might make them less likely to engage in intimate relationships with them. Well, the reply to that from somebody called L.A., they say, that occurred to me too, but I don't think it is correct, because the study said that homicide rates were much higher in interracial marriages. It didn't say that black men murder their black wives at 7.7 times the general spousal homicide rate, which would be the case if the black spousal murder rate were simply a function of the high black homicide rate, which is 8 times higher than the white homicide rate. However, given that the black homicide rate is 8 times higher than the white homicide rate, wouldn't it follow that the black-on-black spousal homicide rate would be 8 times higher than the general spousal homicide rate? So the picture is not clear yet. So even though blacks are 8 times more likely to murder, they are not 8 times more likely to murder their wife if they are black. The third study here. What are the racial predilections of domestic violence? And this is actually a question on Medscape from 2018. So this is just a couple of years old. The National Violence Against Women Survey found that African American, an American Indian, and Alaskan Native women and men, and Hispanic women report higher rates of domestic violence than do other minority groups. So all of those minority groups report that there is more violence in their groups than others. Whereas Asian and Pacific Islander women and men tend to report lower rates of intimate partner violence than other minority groups. And this fits in with the research that's been done that shows that Asians tend to have a higher IQ than whites and are less likely to commit crime. Whites have a slightly lower IQ and a little bit more likely to commit crime, and blacks have a much lower IQ and are much more likely to commit crime. And Asians are less likely to engage in risky behavior, and blacks are far more likely to engage in risky behavior. And if you want to learn more about that, there is a very good book written by J.P. Rushton called Race, Evolution and Behavior. I believe it is. Check that out if you want to see all the statistics about the racial differences. However, differences among minority groups diminish when other socio-demographic and relationship variables are controlled. So what they're trying to say there is, yes, but it might well be down to poverty in the area, because they also don't have much money in these areas. But they don't have much money in these areas because a lot of the time, because businesses just get robbed so much in the areas. So the businesses move out of the areas because they can't make enough money. And that starts a downward trend. And then you end up with less money in the area. And they use that as the excuse for there being more violence among these communities. But if we look at the communities themselves and the countries that they come from, we see that they still have this high tendency for violence. In 1998, Sulber and Taliaferro reported that the spousal homicide rate among African Americans is 8.4 times more than for whites. So in actual fact, the homicide rate among African Americans, blacks among blacks, is the same as the rate of blacks attacking their white spouse. So it is a function of this 8 times higher homicide rate, rather than it being something different or being even more elevated because the partner is actually white. Now, do you think that if white women were aware of that, that they are 8 times more likely to be murdered if they have a black boyfriend than a white boyfriend, do you think they might be slightly less likely to engage in this risky behavior? If they heard those two news stories that I covered, would that help? Well, this is one of the problems, is that the mainstream media doesn't cover these stories. It doesn't tell the general public about this. Because a lot of the times there's violence that occurs, but they don't actually tell you the racial components of the violence. So they won't tell you the names, or they won't show you a picture of the victim. It's only if the white victim says that they don't mind their anonymity being lifted that we actually hear about it. And instead of pointing out the fact that there is a racial component to this, most of the time they will be advocating for support for domestic violence and suggesting that it's just something that men do. And it's not something that men do. Men do engage in it. But when you look at the racial statistics, you see that blacks in particular are far more likely to engage in it. Now, just before we finish, just in case people think, well, this could just be an anomaly, it's just two instances of it that have happened this week. If we go over to American Renaissance, we can just have a look at some of the headlines there, from the section that is titled Miscegenation. So these are all headlines from the section that is to do with interracial relationships. Black man decapitates his white wife, kills their biracial child, and then commits suicide. November 2019. Neighbours said they were a perfect family. So we have the same thing happening there, really. We have the black man decapitating his white partner. Man murdered woman with axe so brutally her head was almost chopped off. April 2019. She was pregnant. So you got the same thing there. Once again, it would have been a non-white man and a white woman, because this is in the miscegenation section. But of course, the way that it's reported in the mainstream media doesn't add race to it. So it just says man kills woman, basically. New Jersey man admits using hammer to kill mother of his children. January 2019. Black man, white woman. White University of Utah athlete, 21, shot dead by black ex-boyfriend. October 2018. She broke it off when she found out he was a sex offender. So again, this instance of the white partner breaking off the relationship, and that's the way that the other partner, the non-white partner, responds. Man repeatedly ran over girlfriend with car, hitting her with brick, witnesses say. October 2018. Black boyfriend, dead white girlfriend. Obsessed classmate who was arrested after fleeing to Nicaragua after killing a New York nursing student. March 2018. The victim had recently ended their relationship. Phoenix man accused of killing wife. Two kids shared video of 11-year-old son hours before Christmas carnage. And that was actually a black minor celebrity and a white ex-wife. December 2017. Vile dad-to-be shoots dead his pregnant girlfriend because he didn't want the child. December 2017, black man shot his white girlfriend in the chest at point-blank range. And finally, ex-Dallas Cowboys player killed his wife by slicing her throat. November 2017, another black football player, another dead white woman. So this incident in particular shows you that poverty isn't the reason for this, because what you've got there is you've got a famous American football player who still kills his white wife. Interracial relationships are extremely dangerous. There may be instances of violence not occurring in these relationships, but there is a much higher chance that there will be violence occurring. And if we actually had an accurate portrayal of the reality of interracial relationships on the television, and if people were actually taught the correct statistics about these sort of things, I don't think we would have anywhere near the amount of black-on-white violence in intimate relationships than we see today. And that white girl who was stabbed up by her black boyfriend, she would still be okay. And poor Vilma, who was decapitated by her Iraqi boyfriend, she would still be alive. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.